Hello and welcome back to Doc Talk.
Despite a bevy of biologics available for people struggling with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, not all patients are able to respond to or tolerate the vast majority of approved therapies. Fortunately, new data presented at Digestive Disease Week suggests that ustekinumab could function as an alternative option to biofailure and bio-naive patients living with these inflammatory bowel diseases. Pooled data from four long-term phase 2 and 3 studies of bio-naive IBD patients found that the event rate per 100 patient years for adverse events were similar and or numerically lower for patients who received ustekinumab compared to those on placebo. And similar events were observed in five phase 2 and 3 IBD studies of biofailure patients over a 5-year period. Additionally, new phase 2 data showed that participants treated with guselkumab, who had inadequate responses to conventional therapies, achieved high levels of clinical biomarker response, endoscopic response, and clinical remission compared to those on placebo. For this episode of Doc Talk, Assistant Managing Editor Kenny Walter spoke with Dr. Remo Panaccione, Director of the IBD Clinic and Director of Gastroenterology Research at the University of Calgary, of the implications of the new ustekinumab and guselkumab data on IBD care.
Hi, I'm Remo Panaccione, Professor of Medicine and Director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Clinic here at the University of Calgary. As many of you may know, we just finished Digestive Disease Week in San Diego. And during that conference, there was a lot of data presented. And I was involved in the presentation of some new data as it pertains to a drug that we've all been using in our clinical practice in Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, namely ustekinumab or Stelara. We know that many patients with inflammatory bowel disease, both Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, may not respond, lose response, or may be intolerant to biologic therapy. And therefore, they may require switching from one mechanism of action to a different mechanism of action. And we know that ustekinumab or Stelara is approved in these patients with severely active Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. So this year at Digestive Disease Week in San Diego, Ed Loftus, who was the lead author, presented the integrated safety analysis from the ustekinumab phase 2-3 long-term program. So it included safety data up to 5 years in Crohn's disease and up to 2 years in patients with ulcerative colitis who had previously failed biologics. And the data from these five phase 2-3 ustekinumab studies were pooled. So in phase 3, patients would either receive a single dose of placebo or ustekinumab. And just to remember, during the phase 3 program, they could either get the 130 milligram IV during induction, or they could get the weight-based 6 milligram per kilogram induction dose that we're all using in clinical practice. And then that was followed up by doses of either placebo or ustekinumab 90 milligrams sub-Q every 8 weeks or every 12 weeks. When we look at that data through up to 5 years, there were 847 IBD patients with a history of previous biologic failure that received placebo, which accounted for about 473 patient years of exposure, and 1,596 patients who received ustekinumab, which accounts for almost 2,000 patient years of exposure. When you look at that and you look at the events rates reported as events per 100 patient years for either adverse events, serious adverse events, infections, serious infections, major adverse cardiac events, and malignancies, which are all the things that we are sort of concerned about when we look at drug therapies, those rates were similar between Stelara and placebo, again, up to 5 years in patients with Crohn's disease and 2 years in ulcerative colitis. And the safety profile overall was consistent with the safety profile that we've become accustomed to with Stelara and other immune-mediated diseases where it has been approved. So overall, I think it just builds on the safety story of Stelara. We know Stelara is a highly effective therapy in IBD, not only when it's used first line, but in patients who've been previously exposed to other advanced therapy. And I think this data gives us confidence that in addition to its ability to be able to achieve efficacy across a multitude of endpoints, that it can be used safely in the long term to benefit our patients with inflammatory bowel disease.
Now, how important is it? I know a lot of biologics will work for Crohn's or work for UC. How important is it to have a drug that could potentially work for both and go to the top of the line for both diseases?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important because there's two things. Number one is, you know, there is this disease entity of IBD of an undetermined type where it sits between Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Literature would suggest that that's anywhere between 5 to 10% of patients. And so you don't really need to think, is this predominantly Crohn's disease or is this predominantly ulcerative colitis? Because when you have data that shows that it's approved in both indications, then you don't need to really, for lack of a better word, hedge your bets. The other thing is that in at the sort of clinician level, I think it's really important because it gives them the sense of comfort because they've been using, for example, Stelara in both Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. The dosing is the same. So it, I think as physicians, we use drugs that we have a lot of experience with much better in clinical practice. So having that dual indication, I think, is extremely important.
How do you think ustekinumab compares to other biologics in terms of efficacy and safety?
Yeah, so again, if there's only one direct comparison of ustekinumab against another biologic, and that's the CVU study, and actually that was just published last week in The Lancet. And so this is in patients with moderate to severe Crohn's disease, where they compared the efficacy and safety of Stelara to adalimumab, Humira, at approved doses. And in that direct comparison, what it showed was that as far as efficacy is concerned, that the performance was very, very similar between the two drugs. There were slightly more adverse events with adalimumab in that study. So Humira, which is still the market leader in the United States as far as prescriptions in moderate to severe Crohn's disease, it performed as well in that study as Humira. So it gives us an idea of where that drug can be where it could be positioned in our patients with moderate to severe Crohn's disease.
And can you also explain, I believe there was Tremfya data presented at DDW?
Yeah, so Tremfya, which is a selective P19 inhibitor of IL-23 is in a large phase 2 program right now. And the phase 2 program in moderate to severe Crohn's disease is unique. It's a typical phase 2 program, which has dose ranging from the perspective of what is the right dose to go into phase 3. So in that program, they studied doses of 200 milligrams, 600 milligrams, and 1200 milligrams IV, which was given at week 0, 4, and 8. And they studied placebo, just like you would study in most phase 2 programs. But the interesting thing here is twofold. Number one is that they also used ustekinumab or Stelara that we've talked about before as an active comparator. So it wasn't powered statistically to show a difference over Stelara, but to sort of give the feeling of how does a selective anti-P19 inhibitor perform against a drug like Stelara that is already available in the market. And the other unique thing about this study, beside the active comparator, was that it was a treat right through design. So many times, especially when we go into phase 3, we treat induction and maintenance separately. So patients get induction, we pick the winners or the responders, and they go into the maintenance arm, usually of different doses. In this particular study, the Galaxy 1 study, patients were transitioned from the IV to receive either one of three doses of Tremfya or guselkumab sub-Q, either 200 milligrams every 4 weeks, 100 milligrams every 8 weeks, or in the case of Stelara, they continued on their Stelara. So it was very, very interesting. So the first thing that we could say is that during the induction period with the IV, that over placebo, that all of the doses of Tremfya for the endpoints that were studied, including the clinical and endoscopic endpoints, performed better than placebo. And I would say, even though the sample size is small, similarly to Stelara. But then if you get into when they transition into the sub-Q doses and you look at the treat right through, we're seeing some very, very interesting data. So for the Tremfya specifically across those different dosing groups, they had a clinical sort of biomarker response, which means getting a clinical response and improving on their biomarkers anywhere between 47 and 67%. You could see clinical remission rates, including improvements in fecal calprotectin and CRP that ranged between 40 and 67%, again, depending on the dosing groups. But when you started looking at even sort of more robust endpoints, specifically endoscopic response and endoscopic remission, wherein the response data showed endoscopic response between sort of 45% and 46%, but that's where you started seeing this separation compared to the active comparator, ustekinumab. So we've seen data in psoriasis, for example, where there are head-to-head comparisons of anti-IL-23s to an anti-IL-12/23 like Stelara, and there seems to be in those head-to-head comparisons, you can see that the IL-23 outperforms an IL-12/23. And this is the first data, I think, in IBD, specifically in Crohn's disease, where we see with the harder, more objective endpoints that we're seeing a separation in Crohn's disease as well over ustekinumab. And I think it's going to be really, really important to see what the phase 3 data show now that we know that what the doses are going to be for induction and for maintenance.
Do you think the IL-23s, I know drug development tends to go in cycles and we ride trends. Do you think the IL-23s is kind of where we're going in the future, at least the next, 5 years or so?
Yeah, I guess with the data that we have from the IL-23 programs that have read out, which include what I just told you in the phase 2, but we have a phase 3 program with mirikizumab and ulcerative colitis. That's been completed and presented. We have a phase 3 program with risankizumab and moderate to severe Crohn's disease, and we anticipate that'll be approved in the U.S. for moderate to severe Crohn's disease, imminently, is that certainly the balance between the efficacy that we've seen and, once again, these are very safe therapies, that we're going to be seeing a lot more IL-23 use out there. First in Crohn's disease and then ulcerative colitis because of that therapeutic index that it seems to have in both Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis.
We'd like to thank Dr. Panaccione for joining the program, and thank you so much for listening. If you want more gastroenterology news, make sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. We'll be back with a new episode of Doc Talk next week. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.